So hello and welcome to the Voice of Florida Architecture, where we share the news, happenings, and celebrations from around our state. I'm Rhonda Hammond, your AI Florida 2024 president, and I'm excited to be here. Today, we continue our series of conversations with our vice presidents. We launched the series to introduce our VPs to the membership and beyond, and allow each to share their vision for the profession through their committee's work and to share what is currently going on with the state. Today, we have the privilege to speak with our Vice President of Professional Development, Mr. Adam Gale, AIA. Welcome, Adam, and thank you for being here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Great. So you and I go way back, right?
We do.
We met during the inaugural class of the JLI Leadership Program. I joined the board the next year, and I believe you were already the state director for AIA Gainesville, about 2020-ish. So you're the vice president of professional development, and you chaired my convention committee this year. But before we get into the nuts and bolts, why don't you share the story of your journey to architecture with us?
Sure. So I feel like I have both a relatively traditional path and then, you know, little bits that diverge here and there. And so as a kid, I was definitely always someone who was playing with Legos and who loved to draw and who loved to draw, you know, buildings and spaces and just these whole worlds. And so I think from a young age, you know, people would say, oh, you're going to be an architect or an engineer one day. And of course, at the time, I didn't know what that meant, but I loved to build and I loved to tinker and experiment and learn. So, you know, naturally, as I went through high school, I took some drafting classes and, you know, always appreciated the math and sciences, but definitely had sort of an artistic streak as well. And so when it came time to apply for college, what did I do? I applied for civil engineering. And it took me all of one semester to realize that that wasn't the correct place for me. It was too much math and science and really probably not enough hands-on, not enough creativity. So yeah. I switched into architecture, went to University of Florida, did their summer program to catch back up. And I mean, instantly, even though it was literally every day, almost every hour of every day, I knew that it was the right decision. And, you know, we were able to draw, we were able to really learn how to think critically. And, you know, just, I think most important, we were introduced to what it means to be a steward of the built environment and, you know, being somebody who helps create that and to experience that not only through your lens, but through the lens of others and how they may perceive that. And so, you know, very quickly, I realized I was on the right track. And I think also for me, you know, I'm historically someone who's been a bit of a jack of all trades and a generalist. And so having this medium, you know, having architecture as the conduit in which to be able to explore design and buildings and drawing and sciences and the art and really kind of put all these things together was just such a wonderful discovery and something that I've held on to as I've, you know, gotten into my professional career. So that's kind of the very start of it. You know, after graduating with my master's, got a job out of college, like about 9 months out of college. It was right during 2009. So we were still in the recession.
Wow.
We had people really still actively being laid off. And I applied for so many positions, but the one I ultimately ended up getting was one I was certainly not qualified for, but one that I was willing to put in the time for. And so, you know, real quickly, I learned how to be an architect and how to do architecture and how, you know, how traditional practice works. It was an office that we did a lot of traditional practice, and I logged a lot of time early on because, you know, jobs were so scarce. And so I think a lot of people said, you know, you really kind of come a long way in such a short amount of time. What was your secret? And the secret is it wasn't a short amount of time. It was just doubling up. You know, if you're working 60-hour weeks, that's time and a half. If you're doing more than that, you're really gaining more reps than you are just working a 9-to-5 and kind of clocking in and out. So I was able to get a lot of experience quickly that way. And, you know, at a couple other stops along my career, it was, what was I adding to my tool set and what was I learning? And first it was how to put construction documents together. And then it was how to manage projects and how to interact with people and to work with people and to leverage all of the skill set of everything that I learned in school and all of my passions that I had as a kid, you know, and start to put that together to kind of complete a picture and, you know, paint something that's really this holistic, generalistic practitioner. And so, now having been an intern to a project manager to a principal to now owning my own practice, I've been able to take something at every stop of the way, been able to meet wonderful people along the way, certainly people at AIA Florida all over the state. Being a part of AIA Florida, I think I really started in 2016 as treasurer of my local board. I was kind of voluntold to be that position. And
I
then
think
I
that
worked my
where
way.
we all start, it's like, what can I do to help? Here, we need a treasurer.
Exactly. But it was really fun. And I really got to meet a bunch of really nice people just in my own backyard who I hadn't had the opportunity of interacting with before. And again, kind of broadening my architecture horizon, just what's happening right in our back door. And so, like you said, Josh was our state director at the time, and he was elected to vice president. And so somebody needed to fill in the second year of his state director term. So I stepped in there, was then elected as the state director the following year. The rest is history. So it's been a real privilege to be involved and to get to know everybody along the way. And, it's something that I really try to take the perspectives of others to help inform what I do on a day in and day out basis.
Thank you. Thank you. That I love the traditional path. And like you, it's the science and the art. It's that perfect union or that perfect marriage that made me fall in love with it. It's like, yeah, you've got this creativity. What have I created? And then now, how do you do it? How do you build it? How do you put it together? That is so intriguing to me still.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. As our vice president of development, tell our listeners about the important role this committee plays and how it benefits all the architects around our state.
Yeah, well, this is a really important one. It's, it's not just how we get our continuing education credits, but it's how we grow as practitioners. And so, sitting on other committees, I've kind of seen the professional development committee from afar. And it's like, this is great that you guys are getting content, you're putting relevant information out in front of us. But then being able to chair the committee and, to see the ins and outs of what really, how you have to get these continuing education hours together and how you survey membership to find out what's important to them. And when you've got a membership that's, very diverse in terms of practitioners and age ranges, what's important to the people who are just starting their careers? What's important to the folks who are, kind of looking to slowly sunset things? And so finding out what is not only kind of the critical items to our profession that we need to continue to hone our skill set for, but then making that relevant across membership, that was really the challenge of this committee. And it was really fun to get to put together survey questions with practitioners from all over the state, to see the varying responses. Do people like having sessions in person? Do we want to go online? Does it need to be an HSW credit? Are we curious about products? Are we curious about technology? And so seeing where those things shook out was really eye-opening, because some of them, I would say some of them differed from what my perspective would have been. And, were things where I were ranking very highly, were very low on some people's score charts. And so getting to understand our membership better, I think, was one of the really important things of me personally being on this committee. But, when you talk to what is the benefit to architects all around the state, our state is so huge. And what's happening down in Miami is very different from what's going on in Jacksonville or Pensacola or even Central Florida where I am. And so I think, again, just kind of leaning into that empathy factor of, okay, there's what's important to me, but then there's what's important to our profession as a whole in our state. And those who are working together to lift that up together, so it allows everybody's voice to be heard. So it was really cool to hear everybody's perspective. It was really fun to be a part of, trying to provide that programming. And at the end of the day, you try to make as many people happy as you can. You're probably not going to make everyone happy all the time, but again, sort of putting on that lens of project manager of, okay, how are we going to drive this forward? Make sure that we are satisfying the most people, checking the most boxes, and putting out really fun, relevant content. That was our design challenge there. So it was fun to be a part of that.
That leads into my next question, and you've kind of touched on it, but you've been an advocate for our emerging professionals for as long as I've known you, and associates as well. Tell us about those efforts and why that group specifically is important.
Absolutely. I mean, our emerging professionals, our young architects, anyone who has, you know, been in the profession for kind of long enough to understand the ins and outs, but is still learning, and as we all are, I think probably the entire time we're in the profession, they're the next generations. They're the ones who are going to be driving the profession forward. You know, we are just setting the table so that they can come and then set it for the next group. And so I think, you know, there's always this idea of you want to leave something better than how you found it. And, you know, certainly there are things in our profession that work. You know, we've been doing this for probably, you know, hundreds of years more, and we know certain things that work, but there are always ways to do things better. You know, there's always I think a driving force that makes us ask ourselves, you know, this is good, but can we do it better? And so the next generation is going to be the ones that are able to pick up the new technologies, you know, like AI, and integrate that into our workflow. I was just reading something the other day, you know, we think AI may replace 80% of like the day-to-day tasks in 80% of our jobs. And that's great. You know, if you look at kind of the history of architecture, you know, you're going back from hand drawing to CAD drafting to plotting to working with 3D models. You know, all of these things help drive our profession forward, allow us to do things faster, hopefully better, you know, hopefully with less risk. And so, you know, looking ahead at AI, like that's probably the next driving step. But we need everybody to know, you know, what currently works, how buildings go together, so that 20% that is not going to be automated, that's not going to be made faster, that we know how to do that part and that we're able to critically think about that. And so I think it's so important to take the lessons learned that we've either had to learn the hard way or that have been passed down to us, and share that with the next generation. Our profession, I would say, historically has been pretty closed arms. You know, there's a veil of secrecy behind what we do. This is my design. You know, these are my details. But again, a lot of this has been figured out and is really universal across our profession. And there's no reason that we shouldn't be sharing that. And so if we can share those lessons learned, you know, if we can make the things that don't need to be hard easy for the next generation, they are going to take the things that are hard and just fly with those. And together, you know, we'll all benefit from that. So it's really important for me to give back. I think I had to learn a lot of things the hard way. I had to spend a lot of time, you know, in the building code, you know, looking at details for how building goes together. And some of that time I would love to have back. Some of that, you know, I probably could have been handed something that I get it like that. And so those are the sorts of things that I really want to push forward. I want to make sure, you know, critical items to our profession are passed along so that we can spend our time using our degrees, our skill sets, and you know, really be thought leaders in design and how buildings, our environment gets put together.
Thank you with that. So the JLI leadership program, it falls under professional development too. And as I mentioned, you and I were in the inaugural group, but tell our listeners about your experience and how it's impacted your career and why we should
Sure.
continue to support this program.
Yeah, definitely. Well, first and foremost, it was really fun. I mean, to once a month be able to meet with, you know, my peers in the profession, and again, just get to know a group of people who I probably otherwise wouldn't have had the opportunity to meet. That alone was probably worth it. But that's really just scratching the surface. I think the amount of lessons that you learn in that program about how to communicate with others, how to, you know, listen empathetically, how to really try to put yourself in somebody else's shoes and understand where they might be coming from. So, you know, whether it's to help you try to take an idea that you have and try to get somebody to believe in it, or whether it's simply just trying to understand somebody's perspective, there are so many exercises that we did in the JLI program that really leaned heavily into that. And I think, you know, kind of talking back about being a project manager, about being a firm leader, you know, being able to get those repetitions and that practice, because this program, you're meeting face to face, and you know, a lot of the exercises that we do in there are role-playing exercises. And you know, Brett Hood, who's been the instructor, he doesn't let you off the hook. He's willing to just let the room
No,
be
he does
awkwardly
not.
silent until somebody responds, until a conversation is started, because that's how the real world works as well. You know, you have to be able to drive conversation forward and not simply shut down a conversation because it's someone is not thinking the same way that you are. And so being able to facilitate that, you know, being able to really bolster your communication skills in a safe setting, to be able to practice public speaking, to practice presentations. I mean, we had one exercise where we had to debate just differing sides of an argument. And there were times where I didn't believe with what I was debating, but that was the exercise. I had to practice, you know, trying to win an argument of something I didn't believe. And so it really stretches your skill sets, you know, as far as how to communicate with others and how to be a leader, how to understand how leaders think if you are not in a leadership position. And I think, you know, again, just getting the repetitions in a safe space, being able to be exposed to that, you know, getting to meet people of all ages, you know, across your state, that is such an invaluable experience. And I think, Rhonda, you and I are probably a testament to that. You know, here we are all these years later, and I think we've been drawn together closer because of it. And it's so easy to work together because of the shared experience that we have. So it's a wonderful program. Anytime somebody asks me about it, I can't encourage them enough to support it, to join, to check it out. Really, really, really invaluable.
I do the same thing. I have a lot of people ask me about it when they find out that I attended. The thing that I took away, one of the most profound experiences, was when he asked the different generations to share what you thought was the worst thing about the other generation. Do you remember that exercise? Because it was hard. And I thought, okay, I'm here, I'm going to be honest. And the one for me was that I felt like the generation below me, or two below me, because we had that broad range of age groups, but their work ethic, that they did not have the same work ethic as my generation did. And then the next, I think it was Laura Lee Diablo, and she was from Tallahassee too, but she talked about our generation thought they knew everything and knew how to do it right and didn't want to share how to do that. So that just launched this conversation. But I took away from that is that they do have a good, solid work ethic. They just go about it differently. And then understanding what each generation grew up in and their perspective in the worldview made all the difference in the world to me. So and people say, I think I'm too old to go. No, 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 no. You go ahead. You'll be glad you did it.
Yeah, the program works better when you've got, I think, you know, a wide demographic in there, and you've got, you know, I guess just greater experiences to draw from. So it's a really cool program. And just like you said, I think just getting that perspective, getting that understanding, so helpful just in talking with people, you know.
No. So my proudest moment is when you told me that you would chair my convention committee this year, because I had all the confidence in the world that it would go well. And I am pleased. I had a grand time, but I think the convention went really well. And you oversaw that group that programmed and planned the convention. And not only to mention, we had the largest group ever, 875. So we're really proud of that. But I want you to tell the listeners about the process of the convention committee and how we go about bringing that all together. Because I don't think people realize that as soon as convention is over, the next group gets started.
Yeah, well, that's very true. And before I even dive into, you know, the nuts and bolts here, it goes unspoken, but it needs to be spoken, how much work and how much effort our staff at AIA Florida puts into planning the convention and making sure that it goes on without a hitch. I mean, you know, it was an absolute pleasure, Rhonda, to help put this together under you and your vision. But I, you know, I'd be remiss without mentioning how much work goes on behind the scenes at AIA Florida with our staff there. And I worked a lot of time with Wendy, with Crystal, with Chrissy. You know, really shout out to everyone and everybody. That's just kind of in prep. Once we get there, everybody, it's all hands on deck. So, but before I even get into the answer, I really just need to say that there's so much work, you know, so much love poured into this from our staff at AIA Florida, and that needs to be said. And then having saying that, that was another really fun process. And I think it tied into, you know, being a part of the professional development committee. And again, you know, it's kind of like, how do we tackle this like an architecture problem? Rhonda's got a theme, it's live, work, play. You know, we want to make sure that we are putting together content that is exciting, that we're bringing in speakers that are going to resonate with our membership, and that we've got something that is there for whether it's your first day in the profession or, you know, your 30th year or more. So it's really, again, this sort of exercise where you've got all these constraints, all of these, you know, programmatic elements that you've got to kind of plug in. And from there it was, okay, let's get on a call. And that call happened, yeah, probably not like a month or two after last year's convention. We sit down and start planning the next year's. And I think the very first thing we talk about is, you know, what went right? What went wrong? Where can we improve? What was the feedback that we heard? And, you know, we put together these big word clouds and we get kind of all of our feedback and say, here's everything that was great and that we want to see again. You know, here's where people felt like maybe we missed the mark a little bit. Here are things people would love to see if we're able to do it. And so that's where we started as this launch pad. And then we layered in live, work, play. And so we start to think about, well, who are people who can present on these topics, who are experts in the field, who are experts amongst our own membership? And, you know, we had a committee of, I don't know, 12 or 15 people who thankfully, you know, all were able to bring their insight, their input, recommend names. And then, you know, we have this list and we have some really big names at the top of it, some really big swings. And it starts with a phone call. We kind of divide and conquer, start making calls and saying, you know, hey, you're an industry expert. Would you like to speak at our convention? And, you know, a lot of people think it's a real honor to speak in front of a large group of architects. And so it's an easier phone call, I think, than, you know, somebody who's just kind of cold calling might think. And that's how it starts. And then, you know, we've got a big spreadsheet for all of the time slots that we've got, all of the people we're reaching out to. And it's kind of a game of yes and no, and where people are available, how we can fit them in, how we can really start to round out the convention. You know, and then we have to layer in our trade show. We have to layer in all of the events that happen during convention. We have to layer in all of the students who we want to come join us, who help bolster our numbers, who, again, are going to be that next generation of practitioners. And so content has to stream all the way down to them. And it can't just be a one-way conversation. We have to make sure they're at the table so that their voices are being heard too. So how do you provide a forum for that? How do we weave in, you know, tours and just all of these factors? And again, really, it's kudos to our staff at AIA Florida for kind of taking all of these things that we all push forward, but really, you know, rounding it out and smoothing it out into the convention that you see. And maybe I'm biased for my involvement this year, but this was one of the most electric AIA Florida conventions that I've ever been a part of. And I think, you know, not just through the number of people that we had, but the speakers that were there, you know, the venues that we're able to secure, you know, all of the content that you leave the convention with, like there's a real energy that can be pulled away from that, that you can weave into your own practice to uplift what you're doing. And that is such a fun experience. So, you know, there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes to make it happen. And when it goes as smoothly as it does, I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, it's when you see the bumps and the hiccups, right? You know, that's when it comes to the surface. But it's like, if you've done something right, you know, it's almost like you've done nothing at all, but it's quite the contrary. So I know, you know, planning for this year's convention has already begun, and, you know, it's got to start now because that's the amount of time that it takes to really pull these things together. So it's a lot of work, but it's a labor of love. And I think everybody who attended this year's convention, you know, can really attest to the quality of content and, you know, the networking that happens there. You know, when you see 870 of your peers in one place and everyone gets to speak, you know, the same language and share their experiences, that's something that we don't get to experience very often. So it's a really,
and then the fun things, the play, the drink and draw, right? And those things, just the fun stuff. Well, you know, one of my goals, and I have not had a chance to share this with you, but and I'm sure I mentioned it because it has been my goal and my intent whenever I participate, that I wanted the convention for everybody to be able to have something to take away that they in their hands that they could put into practice. And I had several people before I left the convention, it was on the Sunday that we got off. That was the other thing. The Sunday off has been was quite popular. But he stopped me, the first gentleman, and said what a wonderful time he had. And he said, I've got so much that I can take back to my office and put into place and put it to work. And I thanked him for sharing, because that was the goal. But my main thing I wanted to show you with, I've shared some that my first job out of school, they were members and they had the designation, but they didn't participate locally or at state. You know, sometimes they went to the state for the CEUs, but they were not interested. And he came this year and he obviously had a good time, because he emailed me after the fact and he said, there was this one session and I can't find the documents. Can you help me find the documents? And through Wendy, we got him. And he told me, he said, it was such a good convention. There was so much material to take back. He said, I'm going to bring my whole office next year. That's and it's awesome. Like, wow. Wow. Yeah, I think so too. And I hope everybody had that experience, because that was the goal. So I thank you again for all your hard work on that. But it was a good convention for me too. So, what I haven't mentioned yet, and to me is the most exciting news, is that you were elected AI Florida's president for 2026. Is that not the most exciting thing? Yes.
So it's incredibly exciting.
It is. You shared your vision, and I think you may have even coined your theme, but I'm not going to hold you to it. But Elizabeth and I were listening, and afterwards she goes, you know, he's already got his thing. So talk about your vision for your presidency.
Yeah.
You're breaking our female run there, but we're really happy you're there. I told you it was your time.
I know. Yeah, you did. And I mean, the theme, if you will, was designed together, and you know, really, we'll see if it holds for convention. But it, in my mind, it's the idea that, you know, a rising tide lifts all ships, and I think as we've already talked about a little bit just on this conversation here, it's the idea that if we can share our experiences, you know, we can spend the bulk of our effort figuring out the real problems, and you know, we're trained design thinkers, critical thinkers, and that's a skill set that a lot of other professions, you know, for whatever reason, just don't emphasize. Like ours really gets that emphasis as we're going through school. And so I think for me, it's how do we take that shared experience? You know, how do we take the things that other people across Florida have either already figured out, or you know, already have started something to gain a little bit of momentum, so that we're not having to start from zero every time? How do we share that? How do we work together, you know, in a way that's sustainable for everybody and that really brings everybody up? And so I think a big piece of that is, you know, mentorship, and certainly training a younger generation, but even, you know, kind of looking upwards, kind of looking both ways across the spectrum, and looking, you know, maybe across, you know, what's going on in Tallahassee that we're not doing in Gainesville that we should be. And if we are, you know, is that something that then Tampa can take and Orlando can run with? And now all of a sudden we're really talking about AIA Florida pushing something forward. And so, you know, really leaning into our experience so that we can spend the bulk of our time solving really critical problems and helping to push our profession forward. And I think one of the things that really has just resonated with me most through my experience with AIA is the advocacy component. And it's something that I don't know if I took it for granted, you know, before I was involved, or I probably honestly just didn't know about what was going on and kind of what happens at the legislative level that affects our profession, you know, potentially on a day-to-day basis. And that was something that I personally really did not have an awareness of until I got involved. And until, you know, even at our sort of local leadership, a lot of things didn't always trickle down. But when you start dealing with the state, when you start attending legislative days, when you start, you know, listening to or even just kind of seeking out some of the information that's really public information and broadcast for anybody to digest, but something that you may not in your day-to-day routine sort of seek out, you know, you start to realize certain things that are going to affect your job and your day-to-day, and how you get paid and what sort of risk you are taking on, and you know, all of those things that are really important to architecture, really any practice. So I think it's being able to lean into the advocacy side again. How do we push our profession forward? How do we stay relevant? How do we stay as thought leaders in the eye of, you know, really everybody? There's a reason that, you know, people name their professions after architects. It's the way that we think, the way that we're able, you know, to drive things forward. And so we need to lean into that, and we really need to carry that forward. And our voice is stronger together, so we can design together.
Oh, Adam, we look forward to your year. We do. Of course, we have you all next year as president-elect. So, but with my final question here, your service to AIA Florida and your work with AIA Florida, you're a citizen architect, your involvement has been extensive. So talk about why you joined AIA and why it's important.
Yeah, so I, you know, was definitely just talking about the advocacy component, and that's a huge part of it. That's not why I joined, but that's definitely a major component. You know, again, why did I join? The principal of my firm at the time was asked to be treasurer of AIA Gainesville, and he said, "I don't really want to do this, but Adam would be really good at this." And you know, sure enough, he was right, and so that's why I joined, and that's why I got involved. And as I got to know more people, you know, locally, it started to make sense that, all right, now I need to get to know the people who are doing this at the state level and nationally. And, you know, we are all in this together. We are all really trying to make things better for everybody. And so I think there was a natural progression to just, okay, I'm involved. I really see the value of this. I see why it's important to advocate for our profession. You know, I see that we really control all of this, and so the more effort that we put in, the more we're going to get out of it. And so that's why I joined and got involved. And then I think, you know, for me, I think I'm like kind of like a quiet extrovert. I definitely get charged up by being in groups, by working together, you know, group projects. I think it's, you know, I'm not like the loud, boisterous voice in the room, but that sort of environment really inspires me and gets me going. And so it's just something that I got excited about. And, you know, I said, if I can take this energy and if I can transfer that to one person and now they're excited and they can pull someone else, that's how you build the momentum. And so I love to just learn new things and really not just like surface level, but really a firm understanding of that. And so every opportunity I have to talk to somebody, understand how they work, how they operate, what's important to them, you know, now I've got that experience that I can then take and add it to my experience and share that with others. And it's really important for me to sort of continue to share that experience. And I think, you know, being able to communicate with others, being able to share their vision, to at least understand their vision, you know, that's something that I want to be able to share with all of our membership, hopefully beyond that as well. So it's, you know, it's a real honor to get to serve that membership in that capacity. And it's not something that I take lightly. You know, we have a really large membership group, a really involved membership group, a membership group that is looked up to by components all across the United States. I mean, people look to Florida to see what's going on. And so it's really important that we are putting our best foot forward on a daily basis. And that doesn't happen if we don't have the voice of everybody who's a part of our membership, you know, made present and put forward. So that's something that I'm really excited to have the honor to be able to represent that group of people and to be able to share that vision again, not just with AIA Florida, you know, all of AIA and beyond. AIA inter what is it? AIA Intergalactic, right?
That's right. That's right. Intergalactic. So, congratulations again, Adam. I can't wait to watch as your AIA service and career unfold. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. So, thank you for sharing with us here today.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. This is a real treat.
So, I hope our listeners enjoyed getting to know Adam as much as I have, and more importantly, the benefits our Professional Development Committee provides for you. I welcome you back for the next episode. Thank you for listening.